Curious for April, a look back at the last month with Bill Halleck, David Tate, Sally Grace and John Glover.
As April began, the American astronauts who successfully reactivated a satellite that had not worked for 3 years were invited to dock with the British unemployment figures.
And President Banda of Malawi, who has sacked his entire cabinet and taken over all the ministerial posts for himself, said it's not a dictatorship, just a more straightforward form of Thatcherism.
While the free world, threatened by Russian maneuvers in the North Atlantic, was reassured to learn that the West's defenses were in competent hands.
We present the NATO Lark.
Steady as she goes, number one.
Aye, aye, sir.
Oh. What's the matter, number one?
That 35th NATO birthday party last night.
Yes, it was rather good, wasn't it?
Yes, sir. I know he's supposed to be on the lookout for Russian ships, sir, but I doubt I could recognize one if it jumped up and hit me.
Everybody tell!
Nasty. Not now. I've got a headache.
Commander Barry, sir.
Not now, Barry. Can't you see Lieutenant Phillips has a headache?
But, sir, a Russian ship on the port bow, sir.
Right, left hand down a bit.
No, when I say on the port bow, sir, I mean literally on the port bow.
Oh, well done, Pertwee. Who says we have made our arms
blurred? Well, when I say a Russian ship, sir, I mean at least 30 of them.
Good heavens, Pertwee, don't be ridiculous. We couldn't have hit all of them.
At least there aren't any submarines, eh, sir?
Everybody down!
Lummy.
Hand me that megaphone, number one. I'm going to have a word with Boris.
Aye, aye, sir.
Away now! Ivan, what the devil are you doing here?
We're out for a little morning's exercise. You don't know what it's like being cooped up in Murmansk for weeks on end.
What is it like?
Like Liverpool without the jocks.
Well, what do you want?
We were just passing and thought we'd drop in and wish NATO a happy birthday.
Well, you can jolly well just drop out again. We've got better things to do than cruise around the North Atlantic, bumping into Russian war fleets.
That's it, sir. You tell them.
And another thing. The next time we want you around here, we'll send an invitation.
Believe us, Troutbridge. The next time we won't need an invitation.
In Australia, the new national anthem was banned after complaints that no one could waltz to it.
While a dance in the tropical island of St. Helena was graced by the presence of His Royal Highness Prince Andrew.
It's Randy Andy in the news again.
He was definitely Prince of the Islands as he visited another tropical paradise.
But there were no strangers in this paradise.
Once the Prince of Passion began his irresistible line in chat up on a local beauty.
Hello.
The place was lovely St. Helena, but the dusky, busty beauty who danced with the Prince was no saint, as her saucy reply soon showed.
Who are you?
And then there was no separating them. They boogied all night long. Well, for at least 5 minutes. And Andrew showed that he was a right royal raver when it came to all the latest groovy dance steps.
Yeah. Get down, get funky, get with it.
Get off my foot.
Oh, sorry. These cans of Coke, they're sort of,
made of tune, aren't they?
What a sensation. Prince tells Sultry Island maiden about his Coke habit. Exclusive. And the Prince met up with his new girlfriend the next day at a sexy secret private hideaway rendezvous in the middle of a huge crowd at a sports stadium.
Hello, didn't I meet you last night?
I'm not sure there were so many cameramen during this fair. Can't really tell.
Royal love rift as Prince's new girl gets him the brush off. Is this heartbreak for Andrew? Find out in tomorrow's exclusive from the paper that brings you all the really big important stories.
Come on, Daisy, old girl. There you are, Daisy. Now then, Daisy, old girl, I've got some good news and some bad news. The good news is that the EEC have decided to reduce milk quotas for you British cows. So I won't be having to take so much milk off you, me old dear. But the bad news is that to offset the cut in profits, I'm going to have to change over to beef production. Now, come on, it's all right, Daisy.
Meanwhile, more evidence emerged of dubious dealings at the Vatican Bank.
Do you believe in miracles?
Well, come and join us at the Vatican Bank.
But the good book is cooked, and all the orders are index linked. Our paper people are never without a surplus of Swiss francs. So, if you are alone, take a pew, and that's for Marcinkus. And remember, mama's the word. See, we'll let you burn the candle at both ends. But if you can't stand the heat, don't go to confession. And don't try to give Marcinkus his marching orders. Because remember, when it comes to bridging alone, we do it at Blackfriars. So, come to the Vatican Bank at the sign of the Black Mariah.
Welcome to Los Angeles for Grandstand Olympic Special. So, after months of debate over sponsorship and politics, the games are finally underway. Now, for a report on the day's athletics, live from the J. Edgar Hoover Dome, here's Alan Tesco.
The highlight of today's sport has been the decathlon, now with the newly added events of hurling the abuse and raking the muck. The Russian pair, Izvestia and Pravda, put in a brilliant performance to take the overnight lead. Bad news there for Britain's hopes. Barely a dozen column inches scored by our previous gold medalist, Daily Telegraph.
I have to interrupt you, Adam. We just heard the Bulgarians are out of the javelin. And according to the CIA, that's official. Yes, despite a world record throw, the Bulgarian was disqualified when his umbrella opened in mid-flight. I don't think the Eastern Bloc has suffered such a crushing blow since Trotsky was picked for the sculling. Over to Ron Pickering at the finishing line of the 5,000 metres team pursuit.
Well, here at the gate of the Swiss Embassy, the Soviet cyclists are just in the lead, but the KGB are catching up. Can they hold on? Only yards to go. Yes, and they've done it. First and second. So the Russians pick up the political asylum and the silver. David.
Well, have a quick look at the medals, Taylor. Now, what do we see? Yes, once again, the Americans are still on top with two Polish dissidents tunneling out underneath it. Alan.
Of course they're all spies. I mean, their tracksuits have false bottoms. Just got time to see that controversial relay technique again. The Americans with the blue vests and cameras, the Soviets in the trench coats. In slow motion here, we see the Russian number three desperately trying to pass on the baton, but unable to find a hollow tree to leave it in. All that training gone to waste. Tragic. David?
So, after the first day, all the fears of commercialism and propaganda quite clearly proved unfounded. Over now to Stuart Story's report on the three-day trials and putting the shot athletes on Aeroflot flights home right after this message from the sponsors.
Here are six Olympic torches. We filled five of them with ordinary batteries and one with Mallory Jones.
On the inaugural flight of Virgin Airlines, which is run by a record company, the plane was forced to return to London because it was scratched.
While in America, a report condemning violence on TV singled out those well-known vicious subversives, Mickey Mouse and Donald Duck.
And now, the violent world of Disney.
Hello, Donald.
Hello, Papa. That
one, unsuitable for children. Rubbish. Take that. And that. Now, why do they say we're unsuitable for children?
Because we're average 82 brutal acts an hour.
Average 82 brutal acts an hour, do we? Then you better take that as well. Cut the violence out. Don't be stupid, Donald. If we did that, they'd turn over and watch the news instead. Take that! And that!
Still in the United States, that other violent cartoon character, President Reagan, proposed a ban on chemical weapons.
But his suggestion, the best way to achieve this would be to increase his own country's chemical stockpile, ran into criticism from some unusual quarters.
Hey, Ed.
Yes, Mr. President.
Why have we been sent all these pornographic videos?
Oh, well, Mr. President, you said they were terrible and ought to be banned.
Yeah?
So I got Congress to order you 10,000.
Ed, what is this?
Well, I'm just following the precedent set by your ban on chemical weapons, sir.
Ed, we're living in the real world here.
Oh, no, Mr. President, not another change of policy.
You see, Ed, getting a ban on weapons is like the way a masseur uses body oil.
A masseur? Oh, I get it. You smooth the way, heal the pain.
No, you apply it to everyone except yourself.
Oh. Mm-hmm. But, Mr. President, how can you expect the Soviets to renounce chemical weapons if you stockpile them yourself?
Why not? It worked with nuclear weapons.
Yeah, I know. What, Mr. Pilsen, have you been holding your order queue upside down again?
No, Ed, it's an empirical fact. If we negotiate from a position of strength, the Soviets will eventually back down.
Oh, sure. Like they did in Vietnam, the Mideast, our backyard.
Don't worry, Ed. I'm sure this exercise will have a happy conclusion for all of us.
But it could end in another arms race.
That's what I mean. Say, Ed, what are those trucks unloading on the White House lawn?
Oh, those? Well, you remember that speech you made calling for dogs to be banned from fouling the site?
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Good morning, Mr. Hess. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
And here's a little gift from all the staff at Spandau.
Oh, you shouldn't have. Oh, my little sweater. Oh, no. Not another five-year diary.
This is Sally Dingo reporting from El Salvador, where no outright winner has emerged from the much-heralded democratic elections. There has, however, been one definite loser, Senor Francisco José Fatpig of the National Corruption Party.
Injustice! The election was a farce. Everything was biased against me.
But observers were on hand to ensure fair play.
Exactly. How could I win under such conditions?
The two remaining candidates now face a straight battle. Senor Jose Napoleon Genghis Attila Duarte, you believe that your Christian Homicide Party will win. What if it doesn't?
Well, that eventuality would necessitate a reappraisal of the electoral procedure.
In what way?
Changing the rules so that I do win.
Speaking of the rules, in several areas, not enough ballot papers were provided, causing mass panic because voting is compulsory under pain of death.
Yes, it is good to keep the people on their toes. Civil war could break out soon.
Oh, really? When?
About 10 days if I don't win.
Meanwhile, Major Roberto Diaz Squad of the National Psychopathic Alliance has recently softened his tone towards his opponent. Major Roberto, yesterday you referred to President Duarte as my good chum, whereas a month ago you described him as a syphilitic communist retard. Why the change?
Why do you accuse me of organizing the death squads? Why? Why do you persecute me?
I beg your pardon. I didn't accuse you of that.
Why not? Everybody asked that. What kind of trick is this?
It's not a trick.
Ah, the no-trick. But you cannot fool me. Who says I am a paranoid murderer? Where are they? Where are they? I will kill them.
Calm down, Major. Calm down.
Yes, of course. Where am I? Where was I? Yes. I have only one wish for my beloved country. Peace.
And how will you achieve that?
Easy. By eliminating all the weak-willed, anti-social, left-wing, bourgeois, capitalist, revisionist, pro-communist, U.S.-backed subversives. Then the country will be nice and peaceful and empty.
And so the business of counting heads continues. Yesterday, three more heads were found in the main square with the torsos nearby. But most observers agree on who will win. The Americans.
Yes, you are tuned to the BBC World Service, where we're giving two cheers for April. A look back at the last month's news.
Following the EEC investigation into ways of increasing the birth rate, Euro MPs demanded bigger stationery cupboards.
And President Reagan, who insisted that he and his wife slept in a double bed, admitted that he had a single bed in every other room of the White House.
But sleepless nights lay ahead for the president as the CIA began its mining of Nicaraguan harbors.
What are you doing, Stanley?
Well, Ollie, I'm giving orders to lay mines around Nicaragua.
Put the phone down, Stanley.
Shall I tell the CIA to do it then, Ollie?
We are the CIA, Stanley.
Oh, that's all right then.
Put the phone down, Stanley. What does the CIA stand for, Stanley?
The Cuban Intelligence Agency, Ollie.
Oh, Stanley!
Well, that's where we get most of our information from.
Stanley, we do what the president tells us to do. What are you doing now?
The president told us to lay mines around Nicaragua.
Put the phone down. The president does what the Senate tells him to do, and they said we must protect the individual rights and freedoms of democracy.
Well, I didn't know.
They also said we must halt the spread of communism. I suppose next you'll be telling me you've mined the ports around Russia.
I'll tell them not to after all, shall I?
Oh, Stanley, this is another fine mess you've gotten us into.
Well, how was I to know? Should I tell them to stop in the Straits of Hormuz as well?
Stanley!
Oh, no, nobody told me anything.
Mr. President, terrible news.
Yeah, I know, Ed. Not so much as
a nomination for best support.
No, sir, not no, that. No. It's your mining of the Nicaraguan harbors. It's being described as an act of terrorism.
No, Ed, I told you before, you shouldn't take any notice of what the Russians say.
Mr. President, that was a quote from the Speaker of the U.S. House of Representatives.
Well, you shouldn't take any notice of what he says either.
But it is more serious than that, sir. Oh. You've been overwhelmingly condemned by a vote in the Senate.
Don't worry, Ed. We can brazen this out with the help of our supporters.
Mr. President, the Senate are our supporters. It's Republican-controlled. They went on to describe the mining as an act of war.
This isn't war, Ed. It's just a bit of shooting and bombing. Now, a real war...
Look, I know that, Mr. President. You know that. But try convincing the senator who accused you of violating international law.
Why should I waste time convincing Mondale?
It was Goldwater, Mr. President, one of your firmest supporters.
Well, the motion wasn't binding on us. I think it's safe to ignore it.
In election year, Mr. President, look, all the Republican senators want is to be told what your foreign policy is. Just get on to them and tell them what you're doing.
For sure thing, that's sure, right away.
Yes, Mr. President.
What am I doing?
So, to escape from the pressures of decision-making, the president decided to take a long, long holiday.
Or what diplomatic observers call a state visit to China.
Picture, if you will, the calm expanse of the blue Pacific as it passes under the bows of the luxury ocean-going liner, temporarily renamed Air Force One. This is the president's slow boat to China, his mission for peace and quiet, his stately progress designed to avoid the many pressures of shuttle diplomacy, jet lag, dehydration, work. The voyage with the motto, if it's Wednesday, it must be my day off.
Say, Ronnie, why is this taking so long?
Well, Nancy, I thought it would be neat to stop off at a few places on the way.
What places?
Oh, you know, Honolulu, Guam, Tenerife, Trinidad, Gibraltar, Cairo.
For with elections coming up in November, the president must not only ensure that his trip to China is a success, but also that it doesn't take more than 7 months. So who can tell what the effects of high-speed travel will be on the president's sensitive mind?
Ah, at last, the centuries-old Great Wall of China lies spread out before me.
Hey, Wilbur, isn't that the president?
It sure looks like him.
No, it can't be. The president wouldn't wander about on the Honolulu freeway.
But thanks to the miracle of advanced Western travel agencies, the president soon has his sense of time and place restored.
Mr. Tang, it gives me great pleasure to visit your wonderful country.
Ronnie.
Not now, Nancy. This is an important formal banquet in the Great Hall of the People's Republic.
But, Ronnie, you're not wearing a shirt.
It gives me great pleasure.
Ronnie, you don't have a shirt on.
Say, Nancy, I'll never understand these weird Oriental customs. They're all taking their shirts off.
And as the sun sinks slowly in the east, the president returns home slowly but surely with the satisfaction of a public relations job well done.
Ah, well, Ed, it's great to be back in the good old U.S. of A. Ed?
Yeah.
Say, Ed, are you feeling okay?
Sorry, Mr. President. I no understand.
Oh, some guys put spaghetti in my beef broth.
What beef broth, please?
Well, Ed, can you see if you can get me a fork, please? Hey, Ed.
Wait. Bye.
Meanwhile, in Los Angeles, the trial of former car tycoon John DeLorean for alleged drug offenses finally began.
But not before the court had made sure that none of the publicity surrounding the case would influence the jury.
Max! Okay, lady, what do you know about the DeLorean affair?
The what?
The John DeLorean case.
Who's John DeLorean?
I don't believe it! An unbiased juror! Okay, repeat after me. I swear by Almighty God.
Oh,
no.
Next. In Britain, after thousands of pounds worth of 50-pound notes turned out to be forgeries, the denomination was renamed the Election Promise.
While in Nigeria, President Buhari was having some money troubles of his own.
In an attempt to stamp out corruption, he had taken the obvious course and abolished the currency.
You wanted to see me, President Buhari?
Yes, Mabandeed. Come in, full of a fiscal policy. We must withdraw the Nigerian currency immediately.
Oh, why? Is it undermined by forged 50-pound notes?
No. The problem is that a great many citizens of this fair country of ours have thousands of naira and kobo stashed away.
What's wrong with that?
We haven't.
Ah, so neither yet so far.
Exactly. So we want them to give all their money back to the state.
You mean like a 100% income tax?
I like to think of it as a redistribution of wealth.
But won't people think they're being robbed?
No, not at all. Sound economics, if the government controlled the currency, there'll be no more corruption.
Except within the government.
We'll worry about that later.
When?
After I've retired.
But what will people use for currency?
We will issue a new banknote. I think we'll call it the Buhari.
You can't name money after yourself. There's no precedent.
Of course there is. Here I am. Anyway, what about the Caesar in the Roman Empire?
Yeah, but look what happened to Julius.
Yes, but remember what it says in the Bible.
What, you mean render unto Caesar what is Caesar?
Exactly, got it.
Personally, I prefer the forged 50-pound note idea.
Shut up, bandit, and let me hear.
After complaints from Falkland Islanders that money was being spent on technical advisors with little practical benefit to the community, a team of experts was flown out to investigate.
But if expertise were needed, where better to look than in the new book about the Falklands War by former American Secretary of State Al Haig?
Is that you, Mr. Haig?
Yeah, who else works in the dark?
It's about your account of the Falklands War.
You like it, huh?
Well, I read the draft copy, and, sir, I really think you should make one or two changes.
Changes? What the hell do you mean?
Well, for instance, there's a style, sir.
Style?
Like your opening paragraph. Now, hear this. Once there were these linemen who tangled with a bunch of RG bums.
Hey, did I write that? That's good.
But you can't say that.
Why not? I can say what I got. I want you. This is 1965.
1984, sir. Which leads me to some factual inconsistencies.
Factual what?
You say your peace plan reached the Arges on May 4th.
Yeah.
Before it was wrecked by the attack on the Belgrano.
Mm-hmm.
But the Belgrano was sunk 2 days earlier.
Hell, I got the right war, didn't I?
But sir, the Brits won't like this one bit. It'll cause a big row.
That's okay. I've taken care of that problem by sending this letter to the Prime Minister.
Huh?
Now then, where was I? Dear Mrs. Galtieri.
And as the Americans recalled the British capture of the Falklands, the British cast their minds back to the American invasion of Grenada.
Sir Geoffrey, would you care to respond to this committee's view that your handling of the American invasion of Grenada was lethargic?
Hang on. I'll be around in about 5 minutes or so, shall we say?
Honestly, you wouldn't think this man was in charge of Britain's foreign policy.
Neither would he.
Hello, everyone. Sorry I'm late.
Sir Geoffrey, we were just saying that your reaction to the American invasion was a little slow.
Nonsense. In fact, I've just sent the Royal Navy to put a stop to it.
But is it not a fact that you are insufficiently attuned to the political feelings of the Caribbean Commonwealth?
No. I'm attuned to the sensibilities of all our colonies.
But Sir Geoffrey, the impression of this committee is that you based your reaction solely on advice from Washington.
I wouldn't say that. Why not? Ronald told me not to.
But why didn't you try to find out what was going on?
I like to be consistent.
Sir Geoffrey, how can you deny that your whole approach has been passive, torpid, and ill-informed?
Very easily. Now, what did you want to talk to me about?
As Sir Geoffrey Howe battled on alone, the Israeli Parliament was treated to a performance by a right pair of clowns.
Yes, it's the two wrongies.
I'm Yitzhak Shamir.
And I'm Ariel Sharon.
Can the two wrongies make a right wing?
Yitzhak is facing an aerial attack to his leadership.
They're both members of Israel's Herut coalition. And as everyone knows, when you're stuck in Herut, it's very difficult to get out.
Listen, Harry, why don't you stand down? I'm going to defeat you easily in the next election.
Yitzhak, you forget the lesson I learned from Beirut. I only stand down if it's going to be a massacre.
The two wrongies, can you spot the difference? They're splitting the right, and the only settlement they'll see is the brand new one they're putting up in the Gaza Strip.
So it's curtains for me.
And it's curtains for him. The two wrongies. It'll have the left laughing all the way to the West Bank.
Here in Britain, the Home Secretary, Leon Britton, brushed aside bureaucracy to grant citizenship to the outstanding South African Olympic hopeful, Zola Budd.
But after pulling a hamstring in training, Miss Budd was immediately deported.
While new Commonwealth citizens throughout the world began training for the 1988 Olympics.
And as you join us here at the Home Office Stadium, we're still waiting for the start of the 5,000 metres immigration hurdles. Over 100 ordinary contestants have prepared for this event for up to 5 years. And it looks as if the Home Secretary has finally decided to get things underway.
Are you dark? Fix it!
Oh, that sounds like a loaded question. Most of the contestants have been barred from entering before they get to the starting line. But there are one or two survivors as they approach the first hurdle.
Right. Does anyone have any criminal convictions?
Oh, and there's a caller. The man who committed a driving offence has pulled out suddenly. And we're left with only one contestant, an Indian woman whose husband has lived here for 3 years. She's out of her own and... But a young South African runner has stolen the lead. 17-year-old Zola Budd has appeared from nowhere to move into first place. She's stepping over the hurdles as if they don't exist.
Follow me, Miss Budd. I think I know a shortcut.
That's the sound of our coach, the world-famous Q-jumper and five-year weightlifter Leon Britton, or South Africa as he was known until recently. And so as Zola Budd heads for home in record time for a male athlete, or any other newspaper for that matter, she brushes aside the red tape and she's over the finishing line.
No, it's a triumph for Britain. That's the whole idea of it.
Oh, I am sorry, Leon. I keep forgetting your name.
But for disappointed black South Africans, there was consolation in store. A visit by the England rugby team.
Hey, all right, Springboks. I've got some good news. The England rugby team has decided to come here in May in recognition of the progress we've made in integrating our team. Now for the bad news. We're going to have to integrate our team. I'd like you to meet Mr. Maguza.
Nice dressing room you've got here.
Yes, well, I'm sure you'll get used to yours. Now, tell me, what sort of game do you normally play?
Well, racially segregated, of course.
Yes, well, we're not at school now. What position do you play?
Well, I'm good in the scrum.
We don't want you getting too friendly, Mr. Maguza. There are laws against that sort of thing, you know.
Perhaps I could go on the wing.
Oh, I see. Well, we don't want you straying or you'll end up with the 100,000...
Is that the sort of crowd we'll be getting?
No, that's how many blacks were convicted last year for refusing to go where we told them.
No, look, I don't get it. If you don't want me to play, why did you bring me here?
Well, actually, we wanted to take some team pictures. Now, if you could stand over there.
Oh.
Don't put your arm around him, boy.
That concludes our look at April, except to note that in the West German village where 300 former SS death squad officers held a reunion, a spokesman said most of them didn't really want to attend. They were just obeying orders.
And the British Legion, who are arranging a free trip to Normandy for 400 soldiers to celebrate the 40th anniversary of D-Day, warned them that they will have to wait on the beach for volunteers in small boats to bring them home again.
Two Cheers for April featured Bill Wallace, David Tate, Sally Grace and John Glover. The script was written by Ian Brown, Paul B. Davies, Martin Booth, Pete Sinclair, Stuart Silver and David Curran. With news lines by Petty Hickey, Max Alcock, Dave Dixon, Nick Yap, John Pye, Ken Ellis, Colin Jackson, Edward Littleton and Tim Band-Aid. The producer was Jenny Campbell.